Welcome again to Course in Miracles. We're going to study some more on this wonderful section that is referred to very often at very many levels of A Course in Miracles, the responsibility for sight on page 448. There's some handy italics there that make A Course in Miracles very personal, and it's kind of calling you out. You know, one of the biggest themes of A Course in Miracles is you are not a victim. You've never been a victim. No matter how you feel about what's going on in your life, you are not a victim. If you're focused on the Gilligan's Island level of experience, you're only a victim all the time. It's proven all the time. But of course, we are on a spiritual journey of awakening here. And you are learning now to take responsibility for your mind. Your world is already a written script. Not what you're going to do in your world. Careful with that. Don't think everything's determined and you have no free will. Not what I'm talking about. Your essential script is written in the world. You've got time written into it. You've got a body written into it. You've chosen a gender to play out as a character written into it. You've got a certain body height written into it. None of us so far, and I don't think any of us, are going to be NBA superstars with a $20 million a year contract. You haven't chosen that. That's not your script. You're playing out a script, and it is written. The broad strokes are written. How you will do it is up to you. What it's going to mean to you is up to you. How many times you do it is up to you. So A Course in Miracles is starting at this point to point out specifically, I say many different levels are in here. So whatever level you can grasp, go with it. But it's pointing out that you are not a victim. You are responsible for what you see, what you think, what you feel, what you do, and even what happens to you. You have asked for. Those are fighting words for people at the Gilligan's Island level of the dream. Those are freedom words for those who are climbing with their spiritual awakening. They're really good news. You see, it's good news because if you weren't responsible, somebody or something else is. And I think there's a lot of suffering going on. If somebody else is responsible, you have an enemy, and they're powerful. So this is really important, and it's really good news. And you really have to not deny these powerful words we're going to be looking at. So you got to take them in. And so we're going to start with a little meditation, kind of get your head in the right spot to be looking at what it means to be responsible. And so we're going to start with just that. So let's take a few minutes. My question to you to take into some stillness and see what surfaces, see what your Holy Spirit says to you is, it's very simple, but get there. What does it mean to be responsible? Very simply now. What might the Course mean when it says, You are responsible. And let me remind you that either you are responsible or you are not responsible. One of those brings you peace. In fact, both of those bring you peace, depending on where you are in your spiritual awakening. Not both at the same time. I'm just saying each of those can bring you peace. You're not responsible? Oh, thank God. Right? Hey, you are responsible. Oh, thank God. So look into that, please. I will not be quizzing you on which of those you choose. I just want you to spend the next minute or two finding out which brings you peace. Personal question. Private question. Which feels true? I am responsible for all of this. Or, I'm not responsible for any of this. And now, since the Course in Miracles very specifically says, you are responsible. For what you feel. Do you fully accept that? I think you would all already agree that you're responsible for what you think. But do you agree you're responsible for what you feel? Do you take full responsibility for that? What does it mean to take responsibility for something? And finally, take this next minute or two and just pick a word or a phrase that would help teach us all what it means. What are some of the things or the qualities of taking responsibility? One who is responsible for something is what? Just an aspect or two to share with us. Teach us what we're talking about here. Sundari, tell us something about what it means to be responsible.
Okay, well, the first thing is, for me, responsibility is the ability to respond. And that depends upon being in the present, not bringing my hurts from the past and projecting them into the future. I can't actually respond unless and have that ability unless I'm in the present. And I choose how to react. So that's my degree of freedom. And so I give everything all the meaning it has, moment by moment by moment. And I got into a really interesting flow of thinking of difficult people in my life, you know, people I'm holding grudges against and grievances with. and realizing that everything comes from a point of innocence. And I went through a process of starting to look for the loving and caring place those people have come from in what I chose to experience as hurt.
Very good.
And
it would take a miracle for a lot of situations.
But unlike what you were saying at the beginning, there was one sentence that I didn't align with. I find that the only way I can stay happy just empirically is if I believe that I can't be wrong. And I can't be wrong if the story is written to the extent of every detail. And recent brain studies have shown that you reach for the water to drink it before you think the thought, I'm thirsty. So that gives me hope of being happy because I don't have to ever look back then and think that I blew a relationship, that I missed the bus because it was my fault, that the motorcycle accident happened because of something I did, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, when I say the script is written, I don't mean that the number on the bus and when it arrives is none of that is the level that I'm talking about.
I know, but for me it is. For me, if I don't believe that, I can't be perfectly happy. Happiness, I have to believe that. Whether or not it's true.
Very good. Very good. All right. Okay. Good, good. That's full responsibility.
Well, that's the only way I can figure out how not to take on any guilt whatsoever.
I like it.
So I go with it. And so I choose it as a belief, whether it's true or not, because it's the only door I know for perfect happiness.
Can't go wrong with that. Perfect happiness will take it any and every time. Follow your happiness, whatever it means. Follow it. This is your dharma. This is your path, is to follow your happiness. And if you cannot find anything that's happy, you will see that there are choices you are simply not making. Your happiness is waiting for you. Thank you, Sundara. It's beautiful. I like it a lot. Luann, I got your mute. Could you tell us something about being responsible?
Well, being responsible is recognizing, for me, that I have choices about how I act in this play that I have created. And I can act as if it isn't my responsibility and then I am in trouble. Or I can act as if, you know, I want to choose happiness. I want to choose peace. I want to definitely choose love. And if I'm doing something that's not bringing me that because I'm choosing to do something else, then I'm not the one that I'm giving up my responsibility.
Great. And your chance for happiness.
And my chance for all of that.
You go back to victimhood. Very good. I love it. Excellent, excellent. Jacqueline, I got your mute. Tell us something about being responsible.
Well, where I went with it, I was paying attention to right now and this Zoom class. And you had asked about feelings, thoughts, and I clearly see that if I'm having a feeling, positive or negative, there is a thought that has happened. So I was paying attention to that. And in this class, sometimes it can be, you know, there can be little stresses, or there can be positive, or there can be, you know, reactions to, or feeling like, oh, what I said wasn't, you know, I wanted to say more, be more clear. There's all this that goes on. It all is going on in my mind. So I was focusing on coming, you know, really being at peace here, really being open and what, you know, letting go of those thoughts, shifting those thoughts to other thoughts. And
well,
somehow in that, then I don't know, then the word humility came up for me. And then from humility came up, thy will be done.
Nice.
That's what happened for me.
Beautiful. Nice. Very, very, very solid direction. I like how you first went in and you went to thoughts, mm-hmm. that you recognize that The feelings are effects of thoughts. This shows the advancement you've made on your own awareness. And then I like how you also went, and as you finish, you went all the way to thy will be done. Because that's peaceful. That's truly free. Course in Miracles describes that the capital W will is not done to you. You are. It is your true will. You are a co-creator at that level. And so, good. So you would wish in your freedom to be responsible only to that will. I love it. Cool. Okay, I got your mute. Barbara, can you tell us something about being responsible? What does that feel like? What are you thinking?
Well, what I was thinking is ownership. And that is based on a recent experience. I think I've mentioned that I'm in the process of a divorce. Mm-hmm. And that is just like prime territory for being the victim. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that intensively, being the victim, on the hamster wheel of repeatedly, I couldn't get out of being a victim. Mm-hmm. And so everything was the fault of my soon-to-be ex. And so there was a lot of bitterness, and it was oppressive. It was
day
just
after day, another episode of Gilligan's Island with
exactly, and it's pressing down on you, and you're in attack mode, right? When you aren't being victim, it's like the projection of guilt, you know, onto him. Mm-hmm. And then I did this until I became ill and was diagnosed with an autoimmune condition.
Yeah, sure. The body shuts off its immunity during stress.
Exactly. So when that happened, it was a wake-up moment where I said, I have to take ownership of this thought process that my mind is ill. And, you know, not my body is ill. Mm-hmm. You know, my body is ill, mm-hmm. but my mind is ill. My mind is what created this.
Your body is doing what it was told to do.
Right. So ownership. And that has been a huge turning point.
Excellent.
Is taking ownership and recognizing how my mind was in attack mode. And it went beyond my ex. It was like anything in sight was, you know, something to attack.
Just and, like the writers for Gilligan's Island, they look at the set and they say, what can we do to have Gilligan mess this up this time? We're going to make a raft, but he's not going to tie it together with the right string. You know, so that's how the episode is going to turn out to fail.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time your husband's going to be guilty. Every time it's going to be victimhood. Every time it's going to be a problem manifest.
Right. Until I kill myself.
Yeah.
I mean, until I kill myself just with the mental process.
You drown yourself.
It's a prison. It is truly a prison.
Yep.
That is the only way you can describe it. A self-constructed prison.
The only reason Gilligan's Island made it past the first or second or third episode was because they introduced humor and hope and relationships, and things were being healed as fast as they were being broken. Actually, they were healing a little faster than they were being broken. The major problem on Gilligan's Island wasn't being solved, but the attitudes were strong. so that they could go through it with a lightness of being, a lightness in the heart. That's what enlightenment is you would go from a darker state, heavier state, smaller state, to a lighter state, to be able to look at it from a larger perspective.
Yes. And it was pretty small and pretty tight.
Sounds
and
like.
And so, you know, I really said, I have to take responsibility for this.
Good.
This is
good.
My responsibility. So that's.
And so your freedom, now your freedom is at hand.
Yes. And, you know, I think I've experienced a miracle. And what I mean by that is, and I was mentioning this to Sundari just last week, just about being in attack mode and watching myself being in attack mode, attacking just about anything. Uh-huh. And then there's been a shift. I'm not doing that.
Uh-huh.
And so to me, that's a miracle.
It definitely is a miracle that you have learned you do not have to attack to be happy. In fact, the attack has the opposite effect. That is indeed a miracle. To the world, attack is a very specific way to be successful.
Yes.
A good attack will work on whatever you're attacking and break it.
Yes. Divorce is really good for that.
Hey, lots of opportunity for attack there. And make them pay. Make them pay.
Right, right.
The Course teaches us that any idea of attack is a two-edged sword. Every time you raise an attack in the world, you first bump against your own forehead, cut it, and then try to hit whatever else. Maybe you hit it, maybe you don't, but you definitely hit yourself. You feel the attack that you're trying to exert on another person.
Right.
And guess what? That's the good news. The bad news is, if the attack is successful and they actually do get hurt by something you did or something you said, if they drink it up and they decide to play the victim to what you did, you have proven that attack is successful and harmful. Whatever you said, whatever you did, was it money? Was it words? Was it bringing up the past? Was it what judging? Whatever you did is now effective in your book. And you are now vulnerable to that being used on you. Or whenever it was in the past, you're going to have to keep it now. Very expensive if the attack works. If the attack doesn't work, it's nowhere near as expensive. Even though it's very uncomfortable because you tried it.
Let it go. You got to let that shit go.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what do you want to have in your life? Good. Good. Responsibility. Excellent. Sounds really good. So, Deborah, would you unmute yourself and tell us something about responsibility?
Well, Barbara, your story, I mean, my storyline's different. I was a fire victim. And there are just a million choices a day of where to put my mind. And so that responsibility word, I just thought about the commitment to set the goal for right-minded thinking. And I'm not always successful, but like Sundari said, you know, being present, being in the present really helps. And just that commitment to setting the goal for the highest good.
Yes.
So
nice. Nobody can do that for you.
Right.
People could do, it seems in this world that all sorts of things can happen to you, but nobody can set your goal. Nobody can set your devotion. Nobody can choose for you. I like that. And Sundari made an excellent point. The only time that you possibly can be responsible is in the present moment. The past is over. The future good or bad. It will never come. But in the present, you're free. And as Jacqueline was talking about, when you choose your thoughts, whatever thoughts you choose, they will be the basis for your experience and your emotions. If you have them, they're going to become from the thoughts. Good. Well, your fire story, Deborah, has brought you, it is your teacher, it is your classroom, and it has brought you to something more important than a comfortable home in your, for your body to rest in or to play in. This has brought you to something far more important than whatever home you lost. It's bringing you to a home that you can gain and keep. It's not for your body. Good. Good, good, good. It is a choice.
Thank you.
Tim, what can you tell us about responsibility? I got your mute off.
And apparently I do too. I guess that with terms of responsibility, how can I bear to be asleep when it's my responsibility to be awake? So that would be A Course in Miracles message embedded with the word responsibility. But it comes down to this. You're asleep and dreaming. Wake up. End of story. It's just that one sentence.
Nice.
Work on it.
Yeah. Work on it. It's great.
What's in front of me right this moment.
I love that analogy of dreaming. Course in Miracles uses it. Some other spiritual paths use it.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Gnostic Christianity, esoteric Buddhism, Gnosis, that whole thing. Yeah. Christianity, the list of really profoundly enlightened individuals all keep coming back to this point.
Yeah.
You're asleep and dreaming. It's your responsibility to wake up.
Yeah.
And by the way, your responsibility will make you supremely happy. Just because you thought there was another option like suffering available for, you know, learning the lessons in front of you.
It also puts everything in perspective. If you're dreaming, it puts all your experiences in quotes and in perspective very, very quickly. Everybody, turn to page 101 in the text real quick. We're going to talk about what Tim's talking about here.
Did you say 101?
I did. 101 in front of the book. It's only a sliver of book there, really, you know, quarter inch or less. Look, 101, and we're going to look at the bottom of the page. This is a beautiful section. It's written very pointedly. It's called The Only Answer. It's in a chapter called The Lessons of Love. I mean, this is very, very generous teaching, very optimistic, and huge promises made. Man, they're backed up. Look at paragraph, actually, let's start with five. Let's start with paragraph 5 to warm us up before the big paragraph 6 hits us. And Sundari, would you read for us paragraph 5?
The ego uses the body to conspire against your mind. And because the ego realizes that its enemy can end them both merely by recognizing they are not a part of you, they join in the attack together. This is perhaps the strangest perception of all, if you consider what it really involves.
Now, who's the they? The they is your sleeping mind and this ego character that you've invented and the body. Go ahead.
The ego, which is not real, attempts to persuade the mind, which is real, that the mind is the ego's learning device, and further, that the body is more real than the mind is. No one in his right mind could possibly believe this, and no one in his right mind does believe it.
Well, thank you, Jesus. Just to find in that paragraph what the beep is going on here. And how is it that there's so many teaches and pagings and promises and schooling that talk about the ego using the mind as its learning ground to make a better world? Didn't you know? If you get healthier, or if you get wealthier, or if you get wiser, if you do those things, you will have a better life, don't you know? Says the ego, says the world. And you know, it's true. Half true. It's half true. Problem with half true, right? It's going to fail exactly half the time and exactly when you want it the most. Yeah. Yeah. That explains the world. That explains what's going on. It explains the hopeful battle with trying to improve your mind about your situation. Trying to improve your mind so that you can have a better situation, a better body, a better bank account, a better set of friends, a better life in the world. It's half true. I make all sorts of choices at the appropriate level to be comfortable. All of you do. We must work on the other half of our existence, the spiritual half. If you can get a strong enough physical experience to be comfortable, then you can use that, which all of us are, here tonight on Zoom, to now awaken the spiritual half, which has been quiet, which has been silent even, at the best subservient to the material. Now, with your spiritual awakening, your spiritual identity must come into the foreground. So watch what he does now with the next paragraph, just to hit the nail firmly on the head. Luann, would you read for us wonderful paragraph 6?
Can you hear me now?
Sounds good.
Well, I can't see anything.
Oh.
But I can hear you all. So I'm going to read, but I don't see anything that looks like Zoom.
Are you on a PC or on a Mac?
Oh, I'm on a... Well, it's not a PC. It's an Apple. It's a Mac.
You just go to Zoom at the bottom and click on it at the bottom of your screen. It'll come back.
Zoom on the bottom.
Touch the screen once.
I don't see any Zoom on the bottom.
You don't have a bunch of icons at the bottom when you put the cursor down there?
Well, there's one that says Zoom Us. Oh, okay, you're back. Thank you.
Sundari's technical support.
Hear then the one answer of the Holy Spirit to all the questions the ego raises. You are a child of God, a priceless part of his kingdom, which he created as part of him. Nothing else exists, and only this is real. You have chosen a sleep in which you have had bad dreams. But the sleep is not real. And God calls to you to awake. There will be nothing left of your dream when you hear him, because you will awaken. Your dreams contain many of the ego symbols, and they have confused you. Yet that was only because you were asleep and did not know. When you wake, you will see the truth around you and in you. And you will no longer believe in dreams because they will have no reality for you. Yet, the kingdom and all that you have created there will have great reality for you because they are beautiful and true.
You notice that you're still there? You are still there to see the kingdom and the value of the kingdom and recognize that you are sleeping. So don't panic and say, I need to keep my body. This is all I am. It's all I have. very important part of your spiritual awakening is to understand that there's a specific cost. There is a cost to your awakening. It's everything you now know.
You know, I was going to ask you a question that kind of goes along with that.
Yeah.
I've been going to the doctor constantly since mid-December, and I've had test after test after test. And the last bunch was at the beginning of this week. I did 6 blood tests, and I have an EKG, and I have one more test that I'm supposed to do. And every time it comes back, like the EKG came back okay, but the blood test, some of the stuff on the blood test showed that I have too little of something or other. I mean, 2 or 3 things. And I feel like I'm getting weaker and weaker and weaker. Like today, I fell asleep almost in the middle of talking to my clients. I had to jerk myself awake a number of times. I sleep all night, and then I wake up, and I'm tired by 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. So I was going to ask you, what should the thought be about all that? And I think we're speaking to it now, in a way.
Well, the first thing off is that you are not having a blood deficiency. Luann is.
Yes, I get that part.
Keep that straight. And don't let a fear arise in you for the you that you actually are.
Okay.
If you identify with Luann, there's all sorts of opportunities for fear.
Well, I think that is my problem. It's really hard to remember not to identify.
Yes, but that's your goal. And that's actually how the Holy Spirit would use a physical disability or a blood test result you haven't got. Those are great because who knows what it's going to say. The ego could give you all sorts of panic. The Holy Spirit would say, chill. This is experience of the body. Now, as you chill and the blood test results come in or you have to go talk to the doctor and you're not panicking and you're not fearful, you will find that even on the way to go see the doctor, doors were open to you. There were people who you could speak to. There were newspaper articles, internet sites, who knows what else, other all sorts of things within a calm mind, with a state of peace are open to you. And then when you do see the doctor, your eyes are open, your ears are open, your body is not in a stressed condition, then it's a much better way to approach whatever news you actually get.
Well, when I start to not panic, I don't remember ever panicking in my whole life, but when I start to worry about what's going on, worrying is as close as I get to it. I say to myself, you know, what difference does it make what my body is doing? And that kind of makes it go away for a while. And then I notice the next thing I know, I'm thinking about it again. So it comes and goes. But I don't like it when it's coming. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, I need to have a permanent thought that causes it to go away. And to say, I'm sorry to say this because I don't like it, but to say that I'm not Luann, I'm not my body. Boy, I'm having a fight with my ego about that one.
Yeah, you would. Your ego's going to rise up and try to make your body less comfortable to try to get you back into its allegiance. It would be a natural step for the ego to take. It's to try to fear you right back into being Luann and suffering completely every way possible. So the essential thought, and there's 100 different ways to say it, and the Course does it many, many ways, around the idea that you're not a body. But it's not enough not to be a body. It's you can associate with what you actually are. And for you, there's only one target that's even interesting.
I'm a creation with all of us as the child of God.
I think that is not going to work, because it's too vague.
Okay, thank you. I didn't think it was going to work either, but
you see, like I said, there are that would be helpful for some people, but not for you. Okay. For you, perhaps the only thing that's really valuable, the only thing that will give you a sense of meaning through this. It's to, or what's in the very chapter we were reading, beautiful little quote. It says, teach only love, for that is what you are. So, Luann, you have a job to do as you go through the situation with your body, and that is to fulfill your only purpose. And that is to be love. How would love deal with this body? How would love deal with the doctor, with the reports? Because this is the only thing that you want to manifest. Now, speaking to you particularly, because over the years, love has taken on a door. It's a doorway for you. It's not true for everybody. A lot of people, love is fighting words, and I wouldn't use love with you. But with Luann, this is important because this is the only door you're willing to walk through.
Yeah, that's true.
So, pick the door and walk through it, lady. We'll talk about that more. But just know that it's the attributes of love that you will take on that will bring you peace. And everybody, well, we should do this on a whole night, but the attributes of love are spelled out for you in your book.
Yeah.
The attributes of love are spelled and numbered for you in your book. Everybody turn to the back of the book on page 9 in the Manual for Teachers. I'm just going to remind you.
I fall down one time, but I thought, oh my God, this is wonderful.
Isn't it? It's laid out for you in perfect numbered.
Number one is trust.
Number one is trust. So does love trust, or does love doubt? Oh, I'm going with trust every time.
Yeah.
Number two, which is on page 11. Is love honest or is love deceiving? Oh, clearly. Oh my God. How could you even ask that? Love is honest because it's trusting. It's easy to be honest when you're fully trusting, isn't it? Isn't that nice how honesty flows from trust? Oh my God. This is great stuff. And in that particular section has a little sentence that's very specific about, Luann, that you would want in your honesty to be honest. It says honesty actually means consistency.
Okay.
That what you think is aligned with what you say is aligned with what you do. Imagine all day long that you never had a conflict between what you were thinking, what you were saying, and what you were doing. That is one harmonious day.
Yeah.
You would recognize, if you were devoted to this very simple principle, you would not be willing to start to do something that you weren't thinking.
When I think about that line, the term actually means consistency. It's probably better not to say anything if you don't believe exactly what you're going to say is.
That's right. You would be weaving some kind of story. And that's what happens when we don't know. You don't have all the details. You start to guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's much better to be in the present. Go with what you do know. Go with what you do know.
Or be quiet.
That's how you can be loving.
Yeah. Okay.
And then it goes on to tolerance. And then it goes on to gentleness. Is love gentle? Oh, come on. Love is joyful. That's number 5. Bring it on. I want double dose of that. Defenselessness.
In other words, never attacking.
It doesn't mean that you don't defend yourself, because that means that there's something to defend against. But love itself does not know of defense. It's a defenselessness state of awareness. If somebody's swinging a 2x4, duck. quick, because that's the level of 2x4s. Generosity is so beautiful. Love is generous because it knows the law of love is to give is to receive. It's very easy. And generosity also, it is a state of being where you are manifesting your love.
Yeah.
And you are giving what you want to receive.
And you know what's interesting about that is you're also giving what other people want to have. And they then can give it back.
Probably, if you're doing this right. Because it's not money and pizza we're talking about.
No.
It's not the generosity we're talking about. Maybe chocolate. But that's as far as I would go in the material world. On
Maybe.
Patience? Wow! Is love patient? Or does love have some kind of a deadline that says, I'll wait for you this long, and then I'm changing my attitude. But, you know, take your time. What? How's 5 minutes? Is that good? 5 minutes. You go 6, we're talking. It's not love, is it?
Or 5 years, and you go 6, we're talking.
Patience is very, very present. It's very, very present. And it's a very, very sharing attitude. To truly be patient means that you are infinitely patient. It's a present state. It's not a future state. To the ego, patience always has a future goal. I'll be patient and make sure you do this. Then you're all focusing on what gets done. If you need time, Deborah, time you shall have. I want you to be able to do this comfortably. This is patience. Love is patient. It's beautiful. Faithfulness. Ah, the strength. Remember, the meme that we want to start is faith it till you make it. Forget that fake it till you make it. Faith it till you make it. It's required. Obviously, you're in a hell. You're in a shitstorm of a world with a worldwide pandemic and an aging body and a diminishing bank account. Who knows what other problem, a blood test, and who knows what it means. Oh, man, on and on. The world will just continue to try to threaten you in one way or the other. On the other hand, there's a spark inside each of us that only awaits us to just look at it in the present moment. And then that flames it like any fire. A little bit of attention can turn it up. Too much, blow it out. A little spark in you is even in the dream, even in a miserable dream, there's a little spark in you that is waiting to be paid attention to. And it works every time, and you know it. Sometimes you feel too sorry for yourself and you're looking at the darkness too much and then you have this attraction to guilt, but that doesn't change this little light in you at all. And you know it. So your faith is called on. Your faith is called on to literally enlighten yourself with a choice of presence, for example. Patience, for example. Honesty.
You went dead, Andrew.
If you're hiding things, if you're defending things, if you're holding back, whatever's surrounding you will start to defend itself and will hide and will hold back. These things are all contagious. You will get as you give. It's the law of love. The law of mind, the law of spirit. Then, of course, number 10, open-mindedness. The ego likes to already have all the answers ready to go.
Okay.
That's the way to run into brick walls all the time. Good, Luann. Okay. Jason, I got your mute. You want to talk to us about responsibility? What does that even mean? We're talking the spiritual path.
Well, the first word or cognitive thought that I had was joy, joyousness, being joyful.
Nice.
And then if I look at how much history and devotion I have to being a victim, I thought of something that's kind of a tenet or a saying in 12-step programs. Luann touched on it a bit, and that's to act as if. So I was, during the meditation, I was fantasizing, what if I acted as if I were responsible? What would that be like? And it was kind of a little cognitive dissonance, a little shift. It was kind of fun. Because I so like being depressed.
Yeah, because it's habitual.
And I see that, and I fight with it every day. Every day. And I don't know that there's no joy in holding on to that. But just to imagine, act as if I were responsible in creating this play and all the other ones I've lived and the future ones I'm going to live. I mean, it kind of changes everything.
You're on it, my friend. It's a door you shall walk through. Very good. Ross, I got your mute. Tell us something about being responsible.
So I've been thinking about the tiny mad idea, and that the mind is responsible for creating the tidy, making the tiny mad idea of separation. And so from there, realization that, well, wait a minute, and it may seem obvious, but so if someone's angry with me, that's the mind's idea. So how ridiculous is that? My idea is mad at me. And then on from there. Okay, so my idea, let's say someone likes me. Well, that's my idea of them liking me. Someone's, you know, hates me. Someone is angry at me. From that perspective, it makes it so ridiculous, and I'm responsible for all of that. I made it all up in my mind, all those ideas of all these other people.
You just went silent, but we certainly got your message.
For a second.
Okay.
Am I back?
You're back now. Yeah, you're back. You're on a roll, buddy.
Yeah, so that's just what's been occurring to me, is to somehow clicked about how I am responsible for the tiny mad idea and everything in my mind. So, anyway, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you, Ross. You know, to support Ross, let's all go and just read that paragraph, because it really fits pretty nicely in our whole story tonight. Go to text page 586. Text page 586. It's roughly in the middle of the book. This is page 586, chapter 27. And let's do paragraph 6. And Barbara, when you get there, would you read for us paragraph 6? I'll unmute you. I got
you. Yes, I'm there, I believe.
Okay.
Let us return the dream he gave away unto the dreamer who perceives the dream as separate from himself and done to him.
And just for emphasis, you could read that first sentence again, because it's what exactly we're talking about.
Let us return the dream he gave away unto the dreamer, who perceives the dream as separate from himself and done to him. Into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny, mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. In his forgetting, did the thought become a serious idea and possible of both accomplishment and real effects. Together, we can laugh them both away and understand that time cannot intrude upon eternity. It is a joke to think that time can come to circumvent eternity, which means there is no time.
Beautiful. Thank you. So this paragraph calls out, it's one of the places in the book where you could say, well, what the bleep happened? How could we go from being extensions of God, where there's endless clouds and harps to play and everything is perfect, to this? What happened? This is one of the places, and there are several, where the Course tries to help you get your mind around the choices that you've made. Sundari?
I am so excited by this together with 101 paragraph 6 that you had us read. When you went to 101 paragraph 6 about the dream, and here we are in the dream again. For me, when I'm explaining the Course in Miracles to anybody, I try to stay away from the Jesus, and I'll say it's a non-duality book.
Yes.
And then I'll go to that paragraph on 101. And the way that I do it is just say, you had this dream at night and there was a demon and a car and a beautiful woman. And when you wake up, you're not looking for them under your bed. At the moment you wake up, you realize that every bit of that was your own consciousness, the woman, the car, but they were so real. They were so real. And then for me, this world is identical. And it's the only way that I truly understand that it's not like you and I are one because we both have a spark of the divine. It's not that you and I are one because we think so much alike and have an ego and a soul. It's you and I are one because literally we're the same mind dreaming this. And it's so cool to me. And it feels to me like these paragraphs on the dream, and in particular for me, that one on 6101, is almost the entirety of what the book means to me.
Very good. Thank you, Sundari. It was beautiful. Yeah, you bet. That's why I like it. These are heavily highlighted, and we go to these a lot. All your books probably have these highlighted. Thank you, Sundari. This is pretty specific. It starts out with, let us return the dream that he gave away unto the dreamer. That's back to the source.
It's all my own story.
Yeah, exactly. Who made this? You did. Ross was saying. Ross was saying it perfectly when he said, these are his ideas that he's following, and he's mad at his own ideas. Do you see the circle? The dog chasing its tail. That's what he was calling out. So let's do that. Let's wake up. We could actually wake up with this paragraph. You could wake up with paragraph 101.6, or you could wake up with this paragraph or all sorts of pages throughout the book, because it gives you a chance to get insight that will make everything fall in place. All the chaotic things that you're struggling with, every once in a while, you can get a literal wake-up from A Course in Miracles in 1,000 places. And this is just one of them. But it says, we're going to return the dream back to the dreamer. There's one call to awaken. Then it says, who perceives the dream as separate from himself. Another perspective being reversed by the words on the page, if you'll hear it. And done to him. So he hits the nail three times. You think you are a victim of your own thoughts. Bang, 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 bang. You'd have to test it to be sure it's right. And the way you do that is the next time you get upset, you take a breath, call in the Holy Spirit into your awareness and say, show me this differently. What am I doing to make myself seem upset? Suddenly you'll find all sorts of cooperation from inside you. But it's really speaking at a much higher level than just how you live your life as well, right? Here comes sentence two. Into eternity. Big word with far reaching. This book uses the word, the E word. That single word is an invitation for a spiritual awakening. That single word taken into meditation could help you to awaken from victimhood entirely. That single word taken as a description of the nature of truth is enough. That one word to free you completely. Eternity. I know you feel it. Well, into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny, mad idea, crazy idea, at which the Son of God, you must underline this following word, remembered. You didn't forget, you weren't a victim, there wasn't some short circuit in your brain and you ended up a separate being, struggling, waiting for good luck to get back to God. That's not what it says. It says you remembered. Remembered not to laugh. It's such a crazy idea that you could somehow not be what you are. Instead, you would be housed in a sack of water and bones. That's really wild. Gilligan's Island. That Gilligan's Island is the all of humanity is laughable. Now, in his forgetting, which you now know you chose, and the book is consistent throughout, oh, thank goodness. We wouldn't be reading it. If this book wasn't consistent throughout 1,300 pages, we'd spend too much time arguing with each other that page 102 is in conflict with 165, which is a complete opposite of page 520. We would this meeting would not exist. The study would not exist. I wouldn't be reading it. You wouldn't be reading it. But I'll tell you, I've been doing this for 28 years with hundreds of different people throughout the years. And we're all agreeing that the book is consistent. And if there's anything wrong, it's that we're not reading it right. And we will come around and we do. It's what a gift. What a gift is this. So these words are very specific. And they're helping you, inviting you to awaken.
You know, it reminds me of that dream I had. The dream I had three times in a row during the night. I woke up the first time, didn't remember it. Woke up the second time, didn't remember it. Woke up the third time and remembered it. And I reviewed it and I started laughing because it was so obviously not possibly true. Like that. It's kind of like, this is a dream. Our dreams are dreams by the person who's dreaming it or the thing that's dreaming it. And the word eternity goes along with that because if we are all eternal together, then we can't be Luann, because Luann's got her body and her name is going to disappear.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Another person who attends this class on a regular basis, Cecily, Cecily's, we're all on a continuum, right? You can't really compare one of us to the other. I mean, but Cecily takes her dreams really, they get to her. They get to her. She really has to shake them off. She had a bad dream that her husband had just done something horrific, you know, to her. And she woke up and she was upset. And she goes into the kitchen and there he is. He says, honey, can I get you some coffee? She says, I'm not talking to you. She had to realize that it wasn't, none of it was real. She had to apologize, but she said, I'm going to need a few hours before I can talk to you. But she's using it with her Holy Spirit to catch her mind trying to keep her asleep and to judge and all that. In his forgetting, did the thought become a serious idea? And there's Ross's word, idea. Ross is busting his ego with all its crazy ideas. And possible of both accomplishment and real effects, like a body, like a marriage, like a divorce, or like Mario, another person who attends the class from time to time when we're in person. Mario's been through marriages and divorces and such. Mario says his wisdom he passed on to us was, first you get the engagement ring, then you get the wedding ring, and then you get the suffering. Oh, a little humor there. Come on, lighten it. All right. So, real effects, right? Because you got, you know, history, and you got memories, maybe you got kids, maybe you got tied up assets, and maybe you've got, you know, the best years of my life. You got all of that is been dreamed and committed to, and together those are real effects, right? They're real. Look, in the world, you can count them up. They're real to the world. But you must remember always that the world is content of your dream. It is not the context of your dream. The world is content of your dream. Your body is content of your dream. Your marriage, your divorce, your pets, your kids, your everything is content of your dream. It is not the context of your dream. What is the context of your dream? It's your mind. You hold your dream does not hold you. That's what puts you responsible and fully capable. You're only one thought away. You choose a thought, you will then live that thought. And you know I'm talking about because you do it all the time. Now, a little bit of togetherness, a little bit of support from the book comes in the next sentence. He says, together. Together we can laugh them both away and understand that time cannot intrude upon eternity. The big E word. That says we. Who's the we? Who's the we in this part of the book? You are not alone. The whole idea of the ego is that you can be alone and you're ultimately alone. In fact, it's only you against not only the world, but you against everything. You're on your own. Is the idea of the ego, that you actually are alone. You were created or made in some way alone, and you're going to have to suffer through your essential aloneness trying to get some comfort before you die. That's the ego's plan. And it's a real big challenge. It's quite interesting. It's just not true. It's not true. You can't actually be alone. It's metaphysically impossible from the perspective of oneness. If you haven't already explored this, you will, because it's a metaphysical truth. And we can do it together as well. But for now, the book has this character, it calls Jesus, that pretends to be the author. That's simply the part of your mind that's awake. The character is extremely familiar with struggles in a life, because Jesus is a life. he's one of the characters in the play. So Jesus now serves as a touch point for somebody who had feet and somebody who had blood and somebody who had relationships and somebody who didn't know beyond his body for a time, like you don't know beyond your body for a time. But this part of you, this part of your mind, the big mind, that woke up from inside the dream and chose only the Holy Spirit as reality, just as you are doing. And he wrote down notes for you, and you're holding a copy right in your lap right now. This is what Jesus is. So he says here on page 587, top of the page, says, hey, look, together, we can laugh away these crazy, mad ideas that you had. He's letting you borrow his certainty. Together we can laugh them both away and understand that time cannot intrude upon eternity. He says, look, frankly, it's a joke to think that, well, time, one of your inventions, can come to circumvent eternity. Well, but eternity means there is no time. And he says, I wrote this book from eternity. He also says elsewhere, I can wait. He's kind of giggling. He says, what? You don't want to awaken back to joy and love? No problem. I'll wait. Patiently. Because Jesus' mind has gone beyond the idea, to use Ross's word, the idea of time. So your part of your mind that is awake, infinitely patient. No problem.
I just find that so comforting.
Good, good, good. What do you got, Sundari?
Unmute there. I'm sitting here keeping thinking. For me, I came to a place where time and judgment were identical. Mm-hmm. And then the question to lead into the laughing again is, am I making the one in front of me the solution or the problem?
Nice. I like it.
And that shift, and I like doing it in the middle of phone calls when I've been billed wrong and I'm calling the dentist's office and I'm saying, oh, they billed me wrong, you know, to catch myself. And I've been in the middle of interaction with people on the phone, and it's going downhill. It's going downhill. And all of a sudden I realize that I've made them the problem. In the middle of it, I'll change the thought, and all of a sudden it becomes this holy instant of sharing and, oh my God, we're, you know, and becoming buddies in coming up with the solution to it. It's shocking. It's shocking to be able to do that in the middle of a phone call, to have it work that fast.
Nice. It does work fast, really fast.
There's also, Sundari, we were talking the other week about our stories and looking at our stories and how our, when you really look at it, and I've been doing that a lot in this divorce, watching them dissolve. When they dissolve, you know, there's a moment of panic because you don't know where you are. But it's also, that's where eternity is. It's a moment of eternity where you aren't as your ego-identified self, your body, your firm beliefs, about your life, that this happened to you and all of this kind of stuff, it all dissolves. And in that moment, there's a moment of eternity.
A moment of freedom.
Yeah.
As we've also studied, and we have to go now, we've run out of time, but we will study this many times in the future. We will study the key spiritual phrase of release, which is, I do not know. It's fighting words for the ego.
Yeah.
But it's a central on-ramp to your spiritual awakening. I do not know. To the ego, it's bad news, but to the awakened one, it's great news. Okay, everybody. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me tonight.
Thank you.
We'll come back to the exact same page next week. And you can choose to say goodbye quickly or slowly. I'm going to make some breakout rooms. And see you guys next week.
Everybody have a good day.